Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
And this is Dr. Lana Love. Welcome to our show. Today
we got a very exciting show. We're going to be talking about a new concept that Lana and I came up with the other day. I mean, I don't know how novel this really is, but we've termed it adaptive empowerment therapy. So this is just an idea that we came up with, that it involves mental alchemy. It's about sort of seeing things from a different perspective and seeing disorders, or mental disorders specifically, more like orders, and disabilities more as abilities. And it's a very different way of, in the mental health field historically, you know, psychiatrists and psychologists would treat mental health or emotional issues as disorders, and they would see it that way, as a disability, and it's very negative, I think.
And I think that's one of the reasons why psychiatrists have got themselves such a bad name. We do indeed. Everything is a disorder, and everything is an illness. And adaptive empowerment therapy takes the opposite view. It embraces disorders and disease as being part of a normal spectrum, but looks at how we can use that in a positive way. What a concept.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I'm sure other people have sort of played around with this idea, but it's almost like an epiphany that we feel we can actually use this in a practical way and really use it as a legitimate therapeutic technique to empower people to be successful in life, in some area of their life or in their passion or whatever. So, because historically, we've seen a lot of historical figures that have had achieved great success with conditions like ADD, ADHD, and hypomanic episodes, tendencies, and that sort of thing. Some of the greatest leaders, artists have done well with that. Yeah, Lana?
I wonder. Unfortunately, David and I are in two different places at the moment, so we keep interrupting each other, but never mind, we'll hopefully adapt. I'm asking you, David, how many wars you think were won through mania? Joan of Arc and others?
Right. That's an interesting question. I mean, I think heard a neuropsychologist not too long ago say that some of the most sociopathic people have become world leaders and conquerors and have gone into the military and law enforcement. But by that same token, you know, we've seen, Lana, you and I have talked about the narcissistic spectrum, and I guess that's very different from a sociopath, but they're sort of related somewhat in many ways with some of our conquerors in history. So narcissism, I guess, sometimes the ego enables us to really produce great results in our endeavors and our ventures, but at the same time, it can be very detrimental and it can be very destructive. That as far as narcissism goes, narcissists and wars.
That's right. Look, it's really interesting to look at things from a completely different point of view, flipping over from personality disorders to personality orders. I mean, take, for example, obsessionality. A lot of the time, that actually gets things going. You know, people that are successful are probably terribly obsessional. They may or may not fulfill the criteria of obsessive-compulsive disorder, but they would certainly have very strong obsessional traits, and it might drive their partners mad, but boy, those people actually produce results. Now, it's interesting. I think, David, you and I came up with this concept from a related concept that we've been toying with for a little while that we call, well, I like to call, creative opportunism. You like that, don't you, David?
Creative opportunism. That's a fantastic term. It really is. It reminds me of, you know, in crime, they talk about crimes of opportunity. Because we are very opportunistic beings. So,
but you know, it's while we're opportunistic beings, I don't think enough people are able to turn something that is seen as not so good or bad into something good. I mean, I remember you and I, David, what was it? Something happened and it was going to really have a deleterious effect on us. And then we thought, well, how can this be a good thing? And in the end, it opened up doorways that otherwise would not have opened.
I do remember that. I remember we were, I don't mind going into this. We were having some issues, with some neighbors, quite a while ago and, had to do with cats and dogs. And yeah, we ended up, actually going to court over this for quite a while. And, you know, cause you had these animals and it was a lot of, it was just a lot of personality clashes going on. Anyhow, but we resolved it. But what was interesting was, you know, we were being forced into a position where it seemed like it was a lot of stress and, we were really fighting hard, but then we realized, you know, we had other bigger issues going on and, we found that we could actually use this issue, with court and with the cats and dogs and the, what was happening with that as a way of succeeding. And we were using it as a tool to solve the bigger problem and it enabled us to move out.
And specifically, I think to, for people, for our audience to get it a bit more, we were in a situation where we wanted to move, but the other party who owned the house didn't want to move. And because of the situation, we were forced to move and we were able to break free. Now that's an amazing example. I remember someone was telling me about this and they told me a story about a person who went to this wise man and this wise man could grant wishes and give insights. And the man said to the wise man, "Oh dear, my son has just had a dreadful accident. This is such a bad thing. I wish it not be so." The wise man looked at him and said, "Well, it could be bad. It might not be." A week passed and they were conscripting all young men to war. And because his son had a broken leg, he was not able to go to war. So the father went to the wise man and said, "Oh my God, a wonderful thing has happened. This broken leg is so good. My son doesn't have to go to war." The wise man said, "Well, it could be a good thing, or it might not be." And then you guess that the next week something else happened. And his son was not in such a good space. And then the next thing that happened, once again, gave him the advantage. So in life, it's not what happens to you. It's what you do with it. And it's seeing these opportunities that are really the gold lining or the silver lining on clouds. You can really turn your life around. I think this is a good time to introduce our good friend Jax, because he's just had a wonderful experience with creative opportunism. And in fact, Jax has also had her own amazing challenges. We love you, Jax. Thank you so much for coming on our show.
Hi, Jackie. Welcome.
Difficult when we're on the phone, isn't it?
Different.
It's a different experience. And we're all in different locations.
So if I can introduce Jackie, or Jax, she's a veterinary nurse and a photographer and just started up her photography business, which is called Priceless Pet Photography Australia. Yay!
Woohoo! Way to go, Jax.
Thank you. Yep. Goodness.
So,
I haven't got
Jax,
my website.
Could you tell us a little bit about how you view adversity, and you might even want to talk about the recent break-in and how that was really creative opportunism.
Okay, well, I first learned of this the Bible story, I think it was, that you just said. Is that from the Bible? The man in the broken leg?
I'm not sure.
No, I don't believe so. It was something we heard from a friend.
Okay, I heard it somewhere. Thought it was probably a Bible story, but
it might have been Confucius.
And my very wise spiritual healer once told me there is no bad thing. Everything is good. Everything that happens to you is good. And you just perceive it to be bad sometimes. It's only your perception that decides something is good or bad. And, pardon me, yes, I found that to be very true, especially with my accident and all the things that I go through. They develop me, and everything happens for a reason in that way, not in other ways that we think or others think. It's not because it's going to bring us what we want. It's good, but in a way that we may not perceive to be good. Now, with my business, I was 2 days away from just advertising and finally stepping out. Took a lot of guts. I don't really have that bravery, but I'm there and I'm doing it, and it does take a lot of bravery to do it. To me, anyway. So I got a boost, a helping hand, by getting robbed. All my equipment was stolen, all of it. Took everything.
When I first heard of this, I thought it was an absolute tragedy because you have really wonderful photographic equipment and you've only just opened your business. And I was absolutely appalled. You know, when I heard about it, I thought it was the worst thing in the world.
You know what? I got that equipment quite cheap because a wedding photographer had decided to change his equipment over for another business. And he wanted to sell in a hurry. And I got thousands of dollars worth of equipment for a much better price. I think I got something like 10 lenses and 3 or 4 cameras for the price of one camera and one lens, pretty much. I was stoked. And I also had my own equipment that I previously had that was also very good, all of it gone. And now that I've replaced that equipment, new equipment has come in since, and I found that the newer stuff is so much better. It has made my life a breeze. It really has. I can take much better photos now. I was using wedding photographer equipment when I should have been using animal equipment. There's a difference. And I also believe you got the pace because of this.
You also got into the paper because of the burglary.
Right. And,
so that was free advertising for you.
Absolutely. At a time when I got this awesome equipment. So I was too busy the other night, but I got some photos online on the same day I was in the paper. And the people from In the Cove, which is a very widespread Facebook, have expressed what has happened to me. And a lot of people are getting on their Facebook saying, what scum, we're going to get them, yes we are. And they're all being drawn attention to my business. Being broken into was the best thing that could happen to me.
It is.
That is so amazing.
Jack, can
if
I...
If you don't mind sharing with our listeners, are you able to tell us a little bit about the accident and how... You know, how that's changed your life and how, I know David and I are always really inspired by you because you do so much and you do face a lot of physical hardships. Are you able to tell us a bit about that?
Oh, absolutely. But what is it? You want a general overall answer or is there something specific that you wanted to know or?
Well,
or in relation
I guess,
to that. Going bad, it goes good.
Well, I guess I guess so.
Okay, it's really
or the ability to.
Here's what happened. Before the accident, I was quite depressed, and I'd resigned myself to a life of doing stepping stone jobs that people do only for a few years as teenagers, like work at McDonald's, KFC. They don't pay very hard. They're hard work. They suck. They're supposed to be stepping stone jobs, but I was just going to resign myself to do those jobs for life. And I think the reason why is because I've been told that I had problems and I was disabled in some way. And these jobs were jobs I was very good at. At Coles, I was promoted ahead of many people who'd been there for years. I managed a store for a weekend that looked like an empty warehouse when I walked in. And when I walked out 2 days later, I turned around and it was a running supermarket. I was really good at it. I don't want to work in a supermarket, but it's something I'm really good at. So given that I felt that I had all these problems and disabilities, I felt that my options were very limited and that I could only do what I could do. And this low-paying job was what I'd designed myself for. Get hit by a car, and now, years later, I'm doing something I really love and enjoy. And I wouldn't have chosen to do something with animals. It doesn't involve picking up poo. Before, because, you know, things that are creative or a little bit difficult were just not, the things that I was told I cannot do.
Yeah, it's very true. When we're challenged, we actually have to stretch ourselves.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. Stress,
I tell you the flea in the cup. You know about the flea in the cup? I have to tell you this. Sorry, David. I have to tell you this. Do you know about it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the flea in the cup. If you put a flea in a glass and cover it with Glad wrap, okay, assuming it can still breathe, the flea will jump and hit the Glad wrap 9 times. If you remove the Glad wrap, the flea will never jump higher than the Glad wrap ever again.
Wow.
Because it's been taught to believe the Glad wrap is there. And that's what our school system does to people. It teaches you there's a glass ceiling, and you are told you're never going to be a famous dish, you're never going to do that, rah, rah, rah. You push down, and you never jump that high. That's how we react, how nature reacts. When there's a piece of glass, a glass ceiling above us, you jump so high, and then we stop.
Wow. And that's amazing because
I love the flea metaphor.
I was just going to say, I think we're in life to test our spirit. You know, that's the human experiment. Life is about challenging the human spirit to reach great heights, and we need to remove those limitations.
The reason they were removed for people like Churchill and Richard Branson, the reason why they excelled, is because they rejected school at a young age. They had learning difficulties, so were told that they can't. They set up yours, and they rejected the concept of school. Therefore, there was no Glad wrap over their head. They were free.
Yep.
To jump as high as they wanted. In a world where no one else is jumping, and they succeed.
Yeah. So the stress isn't so bad. A certain amount of stress will stretch you a bit, and we need mild stress, and some of us have too much stress, but it helps us with our personal growth, and that's what this show has a lot to do with, is the personal growth and development.
I think it's about belief of our environment and what we can do and what others have taught us to believe.
And the limitations are in our mind. What are the real limitations? There's really unlimited possibilities. So there are, certainly there are challenges, but are there really any limitations or disabilities?
No. I'll tell you a story quickly. I went to went to do the year 10 at Hornsby Cave, and there were some special kids during the year 10. One of them was an idiot savant, which is similar to what the Rain Man movie was about. He had a head the size of 2 basketballs, a funny body, scrawny body, couldn't hold up his head, but he did somehow. And he seemed unable to do a lot of things. And then when he asked me when my birthday is, I said, oh, it's July. And he says, well, that's going to be on a Friday. And he knew the exact day that my birthday was going to fall on every single day for 10 years without even having to think about it. He had powers there, absolute powers that were phenomenal. He couldn't do a lot of things, but he could do something that no other person can.
Right.
And there's got to be something in that. Something better than that stupid year 10 course for him. Given that he has such a great ability.
And that's it. Yeah. I'm not great at math, but who cares? It's not my forte. It's not my interest. And I've had 20 different businesses. Were they failures? No, they were great experiences for what I'm doing now. So none of this is all interpretation.
Pardon me. Yeah, absolutely. But there's also another really important concept. When we say that there are no limitations, I think that's got to be put into context.
Sure.
I remember one motivational speaker once was saying that not all of us can be rock stars. You know, not all of us are Elvis Presleys or, you know, Madonnas. But many of us will have talents in particular areas, you know, and what's really important is to find out where your passion lies. And when you're doing what you like to do, then I think there aren't any limitations. It's when you try to be someone else that you lose the limitations. So the big thing about being able to live a quality life and make the most of yourself is to actually know yourself and allow you to be you.
Well, I think life may place obstacles in our paths sometimes, maybe higher forces or whatever, to direct us and guide us and help us learn our lessons and for many reasons. I mean, I do think life is complex and so the things we perceive as limitations, there may be other reasons for that. It may be the universe telling us certain things are trying to assist us in our growth. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, I certainly don't have all the answers, but,
I really like what Lana said earlier when she said that the psychiatric industry is looking at problems and not solutions. I think that there's something really in that. I think that she was to go with this. She could go down in history because it's a great idea. I mean, that fellow who did it, Savon, what they're doing is they're trying to change him into us. He's different. He's got a great gift, but you send him through this system of trying to change him into a plasticine ideal person. He's only one type of person. He's wired in a certain way, and we're not all wired the same.
No, we're not at all. We're all different.
Psychiatrist, and he's like, oh, you've got a problem. You can't do these simple things. You can do difficult things no one else can do. But let's just forget about that. Is that ego? Maybe. I don't know. But try to change a person to be a particular type of person rather than be broad-minded and accept a wider variety of people, which is who we are. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. I think it's fantastic. And you're a fantastic example of that. It's not, rather than looking at what a person can't do and trying to correct that, it's,
mm-hmm.
How can they compensate for those things, and how can we empower the person to adapt with their gifts and their talents, even with ADD and hypomanic manic depression, you know?
We don't need a whole world of people who do well at school. We don't even need school. There are kids walking around saying, I'm not going to need this. Why am I learning this? And I said it myself, and I knew it, and the teachers didn't know it. They're just wasting their time with that crap. So why bother with this whole idea?
I'm squirming, guys. I'm squirming because I'm sort of sitting on the fence here. I'm sort of an alternative girl, but I'm also a psychiatrist. And we're not all that bad. Some are, some aren't. There are bad teachers and good teachers, bad politicians and good politicians. Now, it's true that psychiatry and medicine is focused on disease, and that's one of the problems. However, focusing on the disease and trying to take the disease away isn't such a bad thing. Of course,
none of it's debilitating.
Trying to prevent disease.
Mm.
But the school system in some ways sucks. But in other ways, look, it does enrich our brain. And, you know, there are lots of kids out there that do much better on stimulants, and they settle down and they have much happier lives. But there are others that don't fit inside the box. And, you know, we do force our children to sit for extremely long periods of time. When I see, because I have a special interest in ADD, and I love ADD, adolescents and kids, you know, they've got personality. And I always say to them, look, it's not a disorder. It's only a disorder because we're forcing you guys to sit in school for such a long time, and our culture wants us to do so many things. And I always tell them the story about the Australian Aborigines. I was told that the symptoms of ADD, which tend to be sort of, you know, hyperactivity, distractibility, a lot of energy, perhaps, you know, not so great focus, but, you know, doing a lot of things, has been traditionally seen as a very positive thing for their traditional tribe. Because when you think about it, it's those people that will actually see the snake out in the bushes. They will notice things that could pose danger. And a so-called lack of concentration on a boring subject is in fact, ends up being concentration and alertness on the things that are out of line that might pose danger. And I think it's really important to realize that all these so-called disorders, all these extreme spectrums of behavior in our society are there for a reason. Why genetically is it there? You know, there's got to be some adaptive function.
Hang on a sec. Why genetically is it there? That's a good question. And I think that some people, everyone's wired differently, and but we're kind of getting into with this, the whole, we're not all created equal, okay, but we are created differently.
That's very
and
true.
The reason.
Very, very true.
Would be that some people have different qualities than others. Right?
We can't hear you very well, Jack.
Yeah? Yeah, I'm saying that yeah? some people have different qualities than others.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of their genetics. Yes, and that would be...
We're all so different.
Yes, and some are better at things than others, yes. And some have better attention spans for something. And what Lana just said is that a person with ADD has a better attention span for another thing that suits things like snakes in the grass and such.
Yeah. Well, there's good parts,
there's also
bad parts to everything,
the issue
right?
So what?
I just said there's good parts and bad parts to everything, I suppose, depending on how you look at it. But there are – I absolutely think that if something we see is a disorder, anything that you call a disorder is something that makes you dysfunctional or debilitated to the point that you can't have a normally functioning life and you can't enjoy life and you can't have a good quality of life, like major clinical depression or psychosis that's so bad that you absolutely need to get that treated in whatever way you can so that you can, you know, live a good life.
I've got a little theory on it. If you've got a problem that just bothers you every day, that you notice every day, you've got to get that fixed. You've got to do something about that. Yeah, because if you're noticing something every day, it's something you're noticing every day, and you're probably better off not noticing it every day. I've got a problem that doesn't bother me that I notice every day, but I'd rather not have it. I can't change it. I've got a paralyzed eye.
Right.
But, you know, that's where it came from. The eye doctor said, if you notice something every day, and I've taken that to everything, to the fact I'm in a wheelchair, to the fact I'm on crutches, to the fact I'm on a prosthetic leg that was made really badly, you know, it would be nicer on my whole being if these things were made easier for me for my everyday life. Yeah.
Yes.
So
and lots of people
absolutely
have pain.
Need David to get something treated if it bothers you, yes.
Yeah. If you have pain, you treat the pain as best as you can, and you always try to treat it and manage it and cope with it and as best you can. And if you can eliminate it, that's fantastic. If you can't, then you just do the best you can with it, and you try to compensate and accent your talents and work on your strong points, you know.
Absolutely. Now, we're going to take a break now, and after the break, I want us all to brainstorm more about adaptive empowerment and how a disorder can actually be an order.
All right.
Okay, we'll take a break now.
Hello, welcome back to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
This is Dr. Lana Love. Welcome to our show. Today, we're talking about an interesting topic.
It's adaptive empowerment therapy.
Yeah. Something
and,
that we coined.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, we're broadcasting from different locations, so this I think it's challenging.
Never mind, we can do it. So, now this is really different, isn't it? Because as a therapist, something that I have been uncomfortable with for a long time is how much time we spend on the negative side of things. And obviously with grief and with depression and with abuse, it's really important to work through that with people and honour that. But the problem becomes when you overemphasize it. In fact, something that I've begun to talk to people about is pleasure. Man, I'm thinking of coining pleasure therapy. Because being able to enjoy life, being able to see the good in every situation, and being actually able to plan pleasurable events, it does happen in cognitive behavioral therapy, is a really important thing, and we just don't talk about it enough.
Right, and I think isn't the purpose of psychiatry and therapy to increase a person's quality of life and try to bring them to a normal standard of living and make them more comfortable with their challenges or their, you know, illnesses that or their whatever it is they're dealing with, their issues. I mean,
well, absolutely. It's the thing is, one side of the pendulum is that you remove something which is causing distress. But we're missing the other side of the pendulum, which is perhaps creating more positive, pleasurable events and experiences. And yet there's a third level here where you actually maybe take pleasure from your distress. You learn from it. You open up to opportunities that it presents to you.
Right.
ADD is a wonderful example of that. And Jack, I think you wanted to say a little bit about that, about how ADD can be, you know, such a creative, it can open up so many opportunities because people with ADD have non-linear thinking. Their thinking
Very... Okay, that's a bit beyond... you're talking too much like a psychiatrist to me. The point that I was going to make, and you may be able to, you know, say something on this, is that I've noticed that all people who have ADD and dyslexia are great on computers. Some people who don't have those problems are also good on computers, but I've noticed that they all have that quality. And me, I couldn't do I cannot spell. I could never learn to spell. I've tried. That's something I know that I'm never going to be able to learn. But with computers, I've been able to solve every computer problem that I've been faced with. And I've even solved a problem for IBM that they couldn't solve. It cost $200,000 a day. I didn't go down that line of work because I didn't want to. But you can be quite extraordinary at some things that school doesn't really value as a, something. I mean, it's become that way. Soon, I think ADD will become great at school.
Well, that's an example of your non-linear thinking. So, I mean, and look, folks, we have to say here, Jax is actually a genius. I mean, your IQ is off the scale.
Oh, my goodness, you talk about that. My IQ.
But Jax is a genius, so that helps as well. But when we talk about non-linear thinking of ADD, what we're talking about is a type of thinking which thinks people with ADD think outside the box. They see solutions where other people don't see solutions. And I think, Jax, apart from your ability with computers, from what you've told me, you are very much a problem solver and you think outside the box and come up with solutions that most people wouldn't even dream of.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, for me, that's not just adaptive functioning, that's a major part of civilization. I mean, you know, we're talking about the entrepreneurs, we're talking about people that have, you know, the inventors, you know, I mean, this is, people like you have really moved our civilization on. You know, you need people that think outside the box.
So true. Some of our greatest thinkers in history and greatest movers and leaders were people who had probably hypomania or some type of ADD, or they were on the spectrum of, and just achieved great success in their endeavors and changed history. And we know this; it's been documented, and just amazing results. Yeah. So they used their so-called disorders to achieve greatness.
Yeah, now, of course, we're not saying that you shouldn't. Sorry, Jack?
I was just saying that Winston Churchill was one of them. I'm a bit of a fan of Winston.
Yes,
and he's
one.
Bad and everything. And what you said earlier, I've got to say, about disability being something that, you know, has an effect on wars. Stalingrad didn't want to finish the war because of his ego. I think his ego was the reason why that war was just continuing the way it was. It was serving his ego to be so powerful, which is a horrible thing, of course. But, yes, I think that the whole mania part of it has a negative aspect as well.
Sure.
And
I guess, I mean, we're not saying that you shouldn't treat a disorder like bipolar, because we know that that can really spiral out of control. But there are degrees to it, and I think some people can be quite proud of the positive, I guess, gifts that some disorders can bestow upon you. I mean, you know, when someone is in the beginning stages of mania or hypomania, which is a little bit of mania, the mind speeds up, so it goes faster, and they need their sleep, they have high energy, their IQ seems to increase, and they get amazing ideas. That is important to treat, because untreated, you know, you can get more and more of it. However, many sufferers, you know, see it as a stigma, and many sufferers are also very creative and have achieved amazing things in their life because their brain is outside the box. It's different, and it sees things differently.
Yeah. I mean, people that are continually being told they have a disorder or a problem tend to take that on, and they almost become institutionalized in the mental health system. They tend to see themselves almost as chronic. They become chronic patients, and it's not useful. And what we're trying to say here is that we don't want people to take on that kind of mentality and become a chronic patient. It's much more useful to sort of accent the positive aspects of it if we can. And because if you're focusing on a problem, you're only going to see the problem and you're only going to get more of the problem. So if you are told you have a disability and you hear it over and over and over, you're going to become a disabled person, most likely.
Oh, yeah. Lana would be able to explain the ramifications of that. A friend told me there was an experiment of some sort where if you put a person in a cupboard and tell them something about themselves over and over and over, that they'll believe it eventually. I don't know if there's a name for it, but apparently that
happens. Unless they're contrary and want to prove you wrong.
I was told even if you start off that way, that it will still go into your subconscious. Yeah.
But I don't believe it either.
Certainly most of the time. A lot of the time, I must though, I have to be the devil's advocate here just a little bit. There's a famous Russian scientist who started off life in a village, very poor, and he got teased because he used to pick his nose. And he was so humiliated by being teased and being called dumb that he decided to show everybody up. Of course, it helped that he had a high IQ, but he made a point of coming top in the class, and then he walked all the way to the university in Moscow and ended up as being, you know, one of the most well-read well-known scientists. So, you know, some people are contrary, but certainly a lot of the time people will believe what they're told.
Right. Well, everyone picks their nose, you know that. Hands up who here picks their nose. I pick my nose, I can say it, I do it. We all do it. Poor little guy.
I guess we all do it in the privacy of our own. And it's very enjoyable to pick your nose when no one's looking.
It's the same size as your nostril hole. Everyone's finger is the same size as a nostril hole. We were born to pick our nose.
Made to can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
You can just speak.
Okay, no, there's a black hole in my apartment, and if I lean forward, the phone goes into that little void where I get no reception. So sorry about that, I was leaning forward.
Right, you are.
Yeah, I'm leaning back now.
Look, I think I'd like to finish off talking about, I guess, where adaptive empowerment I see, where it's heading. I think what Dave and I are talking about is more than just not stigmatizing people. It's more than just accepting yourself, warts and all. It's about actually creatively riding whatever disorder or illness or difficulty you have and actually coming up with a way in which can serve you. That's why I came up with the term creative opportunism.
Yeah. I mean, we're also talking about perception, and we're talking about, with ADD, I think there's a different kind of perception. Normally, for me, it's very difficult, and for most people, to have more than one thought at one time. And I do tend to be very productive. I tend to be overly productive, and I tend to do too much at one time, which is a bit like ADD. I tend to, so, but, you know,
I think you have ADD. Yeah.
Sorry?
I don't think you have a bit of ADD.
Oh, that's a good, well, look, I'm going to just.
Is it ADD, or is it just a very productive, highly functioning mind that has so many ideas that you don't know where
to start?
ADD, I mean, it could be a sign of high IQ.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I don't know. I think that all of these things are very, in the DSM-4, DSM-5 manuals, these psychiatric terms and conditions and things are very ambiguous and vague at times, because ADD can look a lot like anxiety. It can look a lot like hypomania. And so unless you've got 7 out of 10 of those things under that label, it's very difficult to know what a person has on this spectrum and what's causing it anyhow. So it's very difficult, as you know.
Lana, correct me if I'm wrong, but it wasn't the DSM starting around something like the Egyptian days where it had 60 conditions, and those conditions were growing over the years into categories, and that's the way it still is today.
Oh, I don't know where it started off in Egyptian days. I haven't heard of that one. That's very interesting.
I might be wrong.
Oh, look, I'm sure it did. I mean, categorizing things and seeing things as black and white has been a characteristic of mankind since, you know, the very beginnings of civilization. And in some ways, it's our downfall, because we have a dualistic way of looking at things. Either you have it or you don't. And we have difficulty seeing the multidimensionality of everything, right? And, you know, we truly do miss that often. So, and I can't wait for the day where if someone has a diagnosis, they get a badge of honor and, you know, say, oh, fantastic, I've got this. And this is, you know, what you would expect with, your degree of individuality. You know, someone with anxiety disorder may realize that they are very, that their mind is very acute. They can pick up any danger, and therefore their mind is an incredible instrument that can be finely tuned to help them in other ways. If they just, what you do is you use that energetic, the energetic pattern that you have, and you then mold it in a way that it actually helps you in life rather than detracts from your life.
Yeah, and I also think that a lot of this has to do with you're perceived as having a problem if it's a problem for someone else or a problem for society. If you're disturbing other people around you and creating issues for other people, then we diagnose that person as having a disorder, because it's a disorder for society, and something needs to be done about that. You know, they need to be institutionalized.
Very, from the early days. So, I've got to tell you, I had a great conversation with a friend about a show called Seconds from Disaster. I encourage you to watch one episode of that show and then ask yourself, what could they possibly have done to prevent that disaster happening? And the answer is always the same. They had to be paranoid. Only a paranoid person could have prevented it. You have to be paranoid. You do. You have to be paranoid. So they're diagnosing people as paranoia. No, that's going to be to prevent it.
Well, you are speaking to a private investigator. I guess we all have a certain amount of paranoia, and that comes out at times, but that's part of our experience, I suppose.
Yeah, watch that show. You'll see that all disasters are the same. That they happen from a lot of little things, not one big thing. They are the accumulation of a lot of small events, which kind of things can just be avoided and, you know, all it takes. But the person who's working at that particular area for any one of those points had to be paranoid. And so careful to the point where they're paranoid to prevent that disaster happening.
Well, that makes sense. We're an accumulation of our experiences, for one thing, partly, and we learn from that, and we operate out of that, and that's where our behaviors tend to come from. That's a learned experience. So, you know, and I think intuition is partly derived from our experiences, too, so, and the actions we take based on it.
Yeah, and I think also, all parts of our world are important. Every body on this earth is playing a certain role. Some people can even argue that those that can cause problems and wars may be useful in some way to change the status quo. Everybody yeah. plays their role. Everybody has their gifts, and I think that's really important. And not only is it important for us to see the gifts in other people, the most important thing is for everybody to see the gifts in themselves and to be able to live their life with creative optimism.
And yeah.
on that very, very positive note, we better end because we've gone over time. Love our audience. Wonderful talking about this. Thank you, Jack, for being on our show. It's very uplifting, yep. very enjoyable.
Yep. Thank you, Jackie Boyd. Really wish you all the best with the pet photography.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Big hugs to all our listeners.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll be back next week with another show on Universal Soul Love.
Bye for now.